Oprah Winfrey has no talk show these days. Harry Carey can't have a talk show anymore. But when David Simpson talks, people listen. And so will you to The True Money Show, exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network channels. Crusade.
Thank you very much for your time tonight.
It's my great pleasure to be with you. Good
now,
evening.
Now, you're an economist working in the banking sector, yeah?
I am. Should I get a lawyer? I think I'm entitled to legal representation if we're going to discuss my work.
No, no, this is just a few simple questions. Don't
simple
worry.
Questions? Yeah. How simple?
Well, they're theoretical.
Theoretical. Questions. I can deal. Yeah, okay, we can deal with that. Yeah. I mean, don't hold me to the answers, but.
Why not?
Well, because I'm an economist and I can think of a different set of circumstances under which my responses might vary somewhat.
Yeah, and everything's connected to everything else, isn't it?
In economics, I'm afraid that is the global fear right at the moment, yeah.
Now, right, there's a lot of uncertainty in world economics, isn't
there? There is a great deal of uncertainty and a lack of confidence.
Yes. Yeah, and there's a lot of talk of quantitative easing.
Quantitative
easing,
that's
a term we hear all the time.
That's a term you hear a lot at the moment, yes.
Yeah, what exactly is quantitative easing?
Well, I can answer this because actually we're advising a couple of governments about this right at the moment.
And what are you saying to them?
Perhaps I should just take you through what we're telling them to do.
Yeah, sure.
I mean,
great.
I won't go into a lot of detail.
No,
that'll be indiscreet, but this will give you an idea of how quantitative easing works.
Yep.
Take printer out of box and place on table with the out tray facing the window.
The out tray facing the window.
That's right. Load paper into the paper receptacle and place currency on glass tray F.
Right.
Check alignment by printing out a test page.
Right.
Go into copy settings and select double-sided and the number of copies you require.
How many would you suggest?
In the case of one of our clients, it's 80 billion, 120 billion in the case of another client, and one client wants a trillion of these things.
Can you get printers to do that?
No, you can't. You're going to need a bank of them. I mean, it's a multi-printer
job. You need some big ones,
yeah, big industrial strength.
Yeah.
Yeah, big like a Bofors gun, all facing the window.
Yeah.
Once you've ascertained that you have the alignment correct, you alert the banking sector, open the window, and press copy.
And stand well back.
Yes, you've got to stand well back because they can create a bit of a vacuum while reaching cruising height.
Whereabouts?
In the superfund industry very often.
And you'd have to consider the wind direction too,
wouldn't
you?
Well, yeah, you don't want to be doing this upwind.
No, because you'd be covered in pretend money, couldn't you?
Covered in what?
Pretend money.
No, this is not pretend money. This is real currency we're creating.
But aren't you just printing it off? I mean, these are photocopies, aren't they?
Excuse me. Dave, this is not going to work. Because I've just explained it to a bloke and he saw through it straight away. Are you in banking?
No.
No, he's not even in the banking racket. Mm. Okay, I'll try that.
Try what?
Have you ever heard of Rumpelstiltskin?
No.
Good. Now we're getting somewhere. Pull up a chair. I'll tell you a tale.
I bet you Mr. Griffin's heard of Rumpelstiltskin. You know, if you see through the operation too quickly, they cease the conversation, terminate the conversation. You know, I can tell you, I'm gonna do this real quick. Let's see. Mr. Griffin's book, if you count the bibliography and everything else, the index, it's 605 pages, 607, I'm going for 608 pages. Wow. We just got banking economics explained to us in just about a minute and a half clip or something. Let's go back to Mr. Griffin, but I wanted to intro this. We're talking to, this is the True Money Show on the Veritas Radio Network. We're talking to Mr. G. Edward Griffin, the author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, a fantastic book, really will open your eyes to things. It's maybe not quite as funny as that little clip we just listened to, but it is quite entertaining. It reads like a mystery novel, but all well-documented, all researched, footnoted, pictures and all. So it's a wonderful book, and I think you will enjoy reading it. Like I said, maybe not quite as funny as the clip, but equally entertaining. Mr. Griffin, I wanted to just open this segment up with one of the things that I talk about with Mike Church on his radio show, The Mike Church Show, also on this network, is one of the things I think has been a demise in our society and just kind of actually across the world is the whole idea of authority. The authority has just completely destroyed. It's almost like they've abdicated the throne. No one wants to be in charge. No one asserts that they have authority, the proper authority, legitimate authority. I should say legitimate authority. Now, we have plenty of people running around wanting to be in charge, but not very many people that are legitimate authority. I consider you an authority on the Federal Reserve. Because, you know, the word author and authority have the same root. It's the idea that you actually know what you're talking about. there's a lot of people who are hatching harebrained ideas out there. After you've done your research, what did you do to prepare, and what did you have to research to write a book of 610 pages or so?
Well, it's hard for me to even recall that process. You know, I've written a couple of books along the way, and each one is sort of different from the other one. It's because the topics are widely different. And the one thing that's common to them all is that, well, there are two aspects that's common to them all. One is that I think at the beginning, I think this is a very important subject. It needs to be developed. I had a feeling that we're not getting the truth about it. So that was the first thing. I felt this urgency to do a very exhaustive and correct job on a topic. And the other thing is I didn't know anything about it when I started, which is really a bad combination. But it turns out in the end that maybe it's not so bad, because had I been a major in banking and finance in school, mm-hmm. I wouldn't have started off from ground zero. I would have started out from the basement. I would have been underground. I would have had to unlearn what I was taught in school in many cases.
I see. I've experienced that, actually, because I'm a recovering attorney, so I have some legal training that I think undid my understanding of the Constitution.
Yes.
And I have some financial training that when I started off in Prudential in 1998, they sold me a line of goods, and I had to undo that before I became wise in how to do people's financial planning.
Yeah, well, that was an experience I had to go through firsthand. So, but to answer your question, is I just started by looking in the index at the library. Back in those days, you had to go to the library; you couldn't just go online and go Google something. So, I spent a lot of time in the Los Angeles library. And I just looked up every book that had been written on the Federal Reserve or any aspect of it. I thought I'd start with what others have already found out, which was a lot, by the way. I mean, I don't claim to be any great magician. Most of the information that is in my book is in the public library. It's in the public record. In any well-stocked library, you can find these things. But it had never been brought together quite the way I thought it should be before. And a lot of it was done in a fashion, David, that was quite boring, I thought.
Right.
It was, authors tend to treat the subject of the Federal Reserve as though it's a topic to be learned, and you have to pass an exam so you can get a diploma and put it on the wall and then go into banking or something like that. So there was a lot of emphasis in these books on the mechanical features of banking and discount ratios and, you know, things, accounting terminology and things like that. But when I got into it and I realized, for example, that the whole system was formed in secrecy,
yep,
on an island off the coast of Georgia called Jekyll Island, and that the people who attended that foundational meeting denied for a long time that they ever were there. And they said, oh, that's just a rumor. You know, today they would have said it's a conspiracy theory.
Uh-huh.
But they denied it. And it wasn't until after the Fed was actually formed and had become almost revered by the American people as a great institution, only then did they begin to admit that, yeah, they were there and this is what they did. And it all came out eventually. But I thought, why the secrecy? And that was the first question I had to ask, is why was there so much secrecy? And, when you think about it, the only reason people have secrets is because they have something to hide. And, so I wanted to know what it was that they were hiding or wanting to hide, and that led to the discovery of where the bodies are hidden and all that sort of thing. So I saw this whole topic as like a mystery story.
Sure.
Of whodunit, and that's how I pursued it, and that really is. It is a crime story. And this is how the crime was committed and who the criminals were, what motivated them, how they went about their task, and how they covered it up and how they bought off the judges, you know, and the whole thing. This is an analogy I'm giving you now, but it is a story in that category. So I just read everything I could, and there were a lot of magazine articles and newspaper articles. I had to do a lot of research in newspaper articles in those days. They have these, these film microfilm readers,
right,
in the library, and you get this big long roll of film. It's nothing but a image of newspapers, all the pages of New York Times, for example, or the Washington Post. And I spent, I cannot tell you how many, probably hundreds of days sitting at a microfilm reader, just turning the crank and flashing all these newspaper pages before me on the screen and reading editorials and letters to the editor and things like that. So that it was just a combination of different areas. One thing led to another, and like any serious writer, you know, you just follow the trail. Wherever the trail goes, that's where you go.
Well, you know, it turned into a magnificent book, and I can just say this, that it is one of the most common commentaries I get on the book, is that it reads like a murder mystery. So maybe you should subtitle it next time. Instead of a second look at the Federal Reserve, maybe you should call it How to Murder a National Economy, right? Maybe.
Yeah, that would be a good alternate title indeed.
Let me ask you a few questions I've gotten from the Internet here. We'll try to do this. I got about 5 minutes. I think we have enough time to run through these questions here. So one question I got from Craig. Craig says, is it possible for the People's House to take back the power to coin and regulate money? If so, how or what form of remedy do you think it would take if they cannot? What do you think the remedy is?
Well, first of all, the answer is clearly yes, of course. The power to monopolize the nation's money and put it in the hands of the private banking system, which is what the Federal Reserve Act does, that power was granted to the banks by a piece of legislation which went through Congress. It's legislation. And so if a law can be passed, it can be unpassed. It can be revoked.
Sure.
So the simple answer is that, yes, all we need to do is revoke the Federal Reserve Act, and it's done. That's, of course, a highly simplistic answer because there are a lot of repercussions from a move like that. But, yes, it can be done if the will of Congress is strong enough. The will of Congress will not be strong enough in the face of the tremendous influence that the banking industry has over Congress now. It will not be strong enough unless there's a tremendous surge of public demand, public will, that is even stronger than the influence of money coming from the banking fraternity.
Right. Well,
that's where our role is.
That's exactly.
If we can create that kind of public understanding and political pressure at the grassroots level, then it will be done. Otherwise, it will not be done.
Well, I'm glad you said that because it's exactly the point of Mike Church's endeavor here on the Veritas Radio Network, is that we have to create the political will, and it doesn't have to be necessarily on the national level. I mean, to revoke the Federal Reserve Act, it would be, but we had a congressman or a state rep on earlier on the show at Mike's show. And he's doing wonderful things at the state level to fight back against the Fed. He's basically resurrecting the idea of federalism. Any number of things we can do to just kind of thwart their power a little bit. Let me ask you this. By the way, if you want to call and ask Mr. Griffin a question, 8445-CRUSADE, a secondary question here. You mentioned something about revoking the act. I think in your book you said the United States has actually had four national banks. So this is the fourth iteration of this thing, maybe not the same players. We have gotten rid of national banks before, haven't we?
Yes, we have. In fact, when the nation was founded, we had one in place. But it soon failed, and it was legally revoked. And then another one came up, and it failed. It was it went out of business. Then another one came up. That was the battle that Andrew Jackson had with the central bank, and Jackson defeated it. It was a close call. They almost had Jackson impeached. But instead, tables were turned when the public discovered that the great bank runs and, I mean, not the bank runs, but the call-in of loans and the Great Depression that was being felt throughout the land was actually deliberately caused by the central bank to embarrass the government and make Jackson look bad.
Wow.
So they could say, yeah, President Jackson was causing all this by threatening our venerable bank.
Uh-huh.
See what happens? Well, when that was discovered that it was being done by the banks themselves as a political ploy to manipulate public opinion, it backfired. And so that was a close call, but they got rid of it again. And then finally in 1913, it was back. Now we still have it.
Right. Yeah. All right, so a question again we have here. One, it says, do you believe the Audit the Fed bill will gain any traction in Congress without having taken back the power to coin? Well, let's just take it in one question. What do you think about the Audit the Fed bill? Does that have value to you?
Well, I have mixed emotions on that. When I wrote my book back in 1994, it was published, I dealt with the issue of auditing the Fed. There was always a bill somewhere floating around in Congress to audit the Fed. And, politicians can get some political traction by saying, yeah, I'm all for auditing the Fed. And so I dealt with that issue. And my answer at that time was that we don't need to audit the Fed. We need to abolish the Fed.
Yes.
And I mean, we already know what the Fed is. What's the purpose of an audit except to delay and to make it seem like we're doing something when, in fact, we're not doing anything at all, because an audit could go on for years, and then there'd have to be some kind of a commission to analyze the audit, and then there has to be a big book published, and, you know, it goes on and on and on. Meanwhile, the Fed is continuing right. to do what it's supposed to do. And when it's all done, they say, well, the Fed hasn't done anything really bad. They've just followed the rules in the charter. Well, of course, we know what the rules in the charter are. It's legalized plunder. So, yes, the Fed is not illegal, by the way. So what's the purpose of auditing it, to see how much money they spent? Well, right. we know how much money they're spending. So let's get on with abolishing it. Well, that was my position then, and it still is, by the way. But I can see in what happened during the years following that, that where there has been some minimal auditing of the Fed brought about in the last few years, primarily because of the emphasis that Congressman Ron Paul
right.
put on this whole thing. It was discovered that huge amounts of taxpayer money was being spent not to prop up the Federal Reserve System, but to prop up the banks around the world. And now that would not have come to light had there not been some kind of a little audit going on. So in that sense, I think, yes, these audits are good in order to expose the depravity of this whole machine to the public, so we can get that political will going that we were talking right. about a minute ago.
Mr. Griffith, can you hang with me for the last segment? We probably need to take another break here, but can you come back for another few minutes?
Why, of course, you bet.
Wonderful. Well, listen, you're listening to the True Money Show on the Veritas Radio Network. We're going to take our last break here and come back for a few more minutes to visit with Mr. G. Edward Griffin, author of The Creature from Jekyll Island. I hope you guys will hang out and listen to us, and we'll ask him one more question about a book written called Tragedy and Hope 101 by Joseph Plummer. See you guys in a minute.
If David Simpson had been Jerry Maguire and showed Leon the true money, it would have hit him over the head like the proverbial ton of bricks. Gold bricks, that is. Let David Simpson show you the true money every Wednesday at noon Central, exclusively on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.